Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Yesterday afternoon, over 700 protesters marched to San Francisco's City Hall demanding an end to police brutality and rampant racial bias. Led by the Frisco Five, who have been on a hunger strike for 2 weeks and were led in wheelchairs, protesters called on Mayor Ed Lee to fire Chief of Police Greg Suhr. The hunger strike was started by a grandmother, two rappers, an educator, and a supervisor candidate. Known as the Frisco Five, the hunger strikers are refusing to eat in protest to raise awareness about the shooting and killing of Mario Woods, Alex Nieto, Amilcar Lopez, and Luis Gongora, all men of color. On day two of the strike, District 9 supervisor candidate Edwin Lindo spoke to a crowd in front of the Mission Police Station about their motivation.
We are starving ourselves because the uncomfortableness we're feeling is nothing like the feeling, and I bring myself back to when Alex Nieto took his last breath and he was shot at 56 times. So when I felt that hunger in my stomach, I thought of those bullets going through Alex. And I said, I can still sit here. I said, he can't breathe anymore, but I can. And there's five others standing with us saying that they're willing to stand and literally go hungry. This is not a publicity stunt by any means of the imagination. We have real people with real families, with institutions that are being ran, like preschools and careers. This is legitimately our last option. And I'm proud because the lieutenant came out and he told us we need to clear a lane. And I said, I just have one request for you. Can you tell Chief Suhr that we are here? And he said, everyone knows you're here.
That is District 9 Supervisor Candidate Edwin Lindo. That was when he was speaking on day two of the strike. He and four others are now on day 14 of the hunger strike. A number of people, including the strikers, went to City Hall yesterday. They wanted a meeting with Mayor Ed Lee. They were told that he was in the Bayview District. After waiting in front of his office, many in the group entered the Board of Supervisors meeting. So today on Your Call, we are talking about police shootings, the hunger strikers, and their demands. Also, how are city officials responding? Today, we are joined by Yaini Ababa, a spokesperson for the Frisco Five, a San Francisco native San Franciscan from Haight-Ashbury. Yaini became an activist after watching a video of Mario Woods being killed, and she says she's fighting for the city of San Francisco. Yaini joins me here in studio. Hi, Yaini. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Jeff Adachi. He leads the San Francisco Public Defender's Office. The San Francisco Public Defender's Office is calling for a federal investigation of racial bias and racism within the San Francisco Police Department. And Jeff also joins me in studio. Hi, Jeff. Thank you for coming in.
Morning.
And we're joined by Sana Salim. Sana reports for the independent progressive media outlet 48 Hills in San Francisco, and Sana has been covering the Frisco Five hunger strike. Hi, Sana. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So we did invite the SFPD to join us. They declined our request, but they sent over a statement saying the chief will stay and see the police reforms be implemented in the SFPD, which he has been working closely with the mayor's office. Jeff Adachi, I want to start off with you. I mean, we can spend an entire hour on these individual shootings. We're talking about Mario Woods, Alex Nieto, Amilcar Lopez, Luis Gongora. These are men of color who were shot and killed over just the past 3 years. Can you give us an update on these cases?
Well, these involve a series of unjustified killings and shootings by SFPD. And what emerges here is a pattern where officers are, you know, not only, you know, acting to contain these situations, but they're essentially executing. And that's what we saw with the Mario Woods video, is that they executed that man. They had Mr. Woods surrounded by 11 officers, and yet they found it necessary as he was walking away, they claimed that he had a knife in his hand, assassinating him in a hail of bullets. And anyone who saw that, and I hope this is true of any San Franciscan that saw that, thought, what the heck is going on here? And then we had, of course, the Alex Nieto shooting, 50-something shots. We had Emil Carr. The district attorney is about to announce a decision in that case based on their investigation, but it appears he was shot in the back when he was trying to retrieve his cell phone. And then, tragically, Luis Gongora, a Latino man who was supposedly at some point seen holding a knife, and within 22 seconds of the police arriving, they had shot him twice with beanbags and claimed that didn't work, and they shot him to death. So that's what's happening in San Francisco. And you add to that, two racist tech scandals where 18 officers were involved in exchanging racist texts on two separate incidents, two separate officers who happened to be arrested for crimes, their cell phones were searched, and they talked about white power and supremacy and killing black children, the N-word repeatedly, calling Latinos beaners. And the scariest thing is that it's clear that their biases affected their work.
We'll talk about the racist text later in the show, but going back to the shootings, Jeff, you say that they were unjustified. Can you talk about what goes on behind the scenes? What role does your office play in taking part in these investigations?
Well, we see often the abuse of force by police. And all around this country, right, if you're talking about all of the killings and shootings of black men and teenagers around the country, from Tamir Rice to Michael Brown to Eric Gardner, what you're seeing is an abuse of force, that officers are not only using force, but they're abusing it to the extent that they are killing people without reason. And what I think bothers most Americans, or should bother most Americans, is that there are no consequences, that in many cases the officers are not held accountable. And the same thing is true in San Francisco. I don't think we've ever had an officer held accountable for an unjustified killing of a citizen. And if you don't have accountability, then people don't believe in the system anymore, and they don't respect the police, and they don't feel that the police are acting in the best interest of the community. And it's, for that matter, it's not a good thing for police either, because the police aren't safe, and the police don't have a place in society where we respect them.
Has your office, or have you been in contact with the SFPD on these issues?
Absolutely. I have a good relationship with Chief Sir, and I call him on these issues. I mean, we exposed corruption in the police department as far back as 2011, when officers were stealing and breaking into people's rooms without a warrant. We were involved in a crime lab scandal that resulted in 1,000 criminal cases being dismissed. We helped uncover the fact that there were 68 officers who had misconduct records that were being withheld from the public and from the defense. So I have a long history with that department, with not only Chief Sir, but all of the chiefs in that department. I'm not necessarily popular with them, but as a public defender, part of my job is to hold them accountable. And we see in court abuse that occurs, whether it's somebody being charged falsely with resisting arrest, I'm not trying to cast aspersions on all police officers, but there are some real bad apples out there. And not only have these bad apples been allowed to thrive, but they've been in leadership positions. I mean, the sergeant who was behind the scandal where they were stealing, I mean, and we have a captain involved, a lieutenant involved in this incident. These are people who have leadership, who are training other officers. That's a pretty scary thing.
That is Jeff Adachi. He is San Francisco's public defender. His office is calling for a federal investigation of racial bias and racism within the San Francisco Police Department. Today, we are talking about the recent shootings and killings, the hunger strikes, and calls for Mayor Ed Lee to fire Police Chief Greg Suhr. Mayor Ed Lee appointed Chief Greg Suhr. We did reach out to the SFPD. They sent us a statement, but they were not able to join us. Yanni Ababa, you're a spokesperson for the Frisco Five. So five people right now are on strike. It's day 14. They have not eaten for 2 weeks.
They have not eaten. Well, they actually stopped eating the day before. So this is probably day 15. They stopped at noon the day before. So 14 and a half, I guess.
And I mean, I've seen video. In some videos, they seem so tired. Yesterday, they were pushed in wheelchairs yes. to make it to City Hall. How are they doing physically?
Physically, they're doing as well as can be expected, given that they haven't eaten for 2 weeks. I think the community coming and supporting them and giving them a lot of love and comfort has actually helped them make it through each day. But they're committed to this.
How did they get to the point where they said, all right, this is enough. We're going to stop eating. We're going to go on hunger strike.
It was Maria Cristina Gutierrez. It was her idea. She'd been talking about it for a while, even before Mario Woods was killed. She'd been paying attention since Kenneth Harding, Idris Stelly. These are other people who've been killed in questionable circumstances by SFPD. And she cares very deeply for the black and brown community in San Francisco and in the world. And she felt like no one was paying attention. And she had to do something extreme to get everyone to pay attention to what's going on. This is a human rights issue. This is a human rights crisis here in our city.
And she's a grandmother.
She just became a great-grandmother yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Tell us more about her and her motivation.
She is the executive director of Compañeros del Barrio. I apologize for my accent, which is a preschool in the Mission that empowers people of color and children of color. Through education, through not being dependent on government resources and becoming independent and strengthening her community. She has a dedication to strengthening her community. She's always been a revolutionary. This is not her first hunger strike. She did one in the 80s also, so she knew what she was getting into.
And what are they calling for exactly?
They want the chief of police to be fired.
And Sanaa, you have been covering this extensively. What really stands out for you about this moment in San Francisco? We're coming to a point now where we've got five people who have not eaten for 14 days because they feel like there have been no consequences, like Jeff Adachi just said.
For me, because I reported previously on the Alex Nieto trial as well, for me, the most monumental point for the city is the coming together of the black and brown communities. So it's not like they're segregated or they're fragments. They're people that are coming together and saying, hey, you know, no more. Enough is enough. And I think that's part of the motivation of the Frisco Five as well, where they felt that they needed to do something that was passive and peaceful, but also very, very strong. And then they were ready to give away their lives or sacrifice a significant part of it just to make a strong statement. And like you said, not enough has been said about these killings. People don't know. And while I've been reporting on this for the past 14 days, and part of this effort is the fact that they're sleeping on the street. Not only are they going hungry without solace, they're also camping out outside in front of the Mission Police Station.
Right.
And so when people, and it's the Valencia, and people who pass by, because it's a sort of a touristy spot, so people who pass by stop and ask what's going on. And I think that's part of the struggle as well, that a lot of people, the gentrifiers or whatever you like, the community calls them, are now finding out about these police shootings. And I've heard a lot of individuals who are like, really? Who's Mario Woods? Who's Alex Nieto? Is this happening? So I feel that that's really significant.
Tell us about a few of the other hunger strikers. There are five altogether.
So the Maria Cristina is sort of like the unannounced leader of the movement. Yanni spoke about it. Then there is Edwin Lindo. And then Cristina's son, Equipto. Ike Pinkston, who works with Christina at her school, and Selassie. And Selassie and Equipto are hip-hop artists. Edwin Lindo is an aspiring politician and a lawyer. And Ike is a teacher. And I've seen them, I've followed them for the past 2 weeks, and I've seen how weak they've become in the way that they speak. And I know that I've also noticed, like, because I joined them at noon and I try to stay up till as late as I can towards night because everything keeps happening through the day. And I see how they're so weak during the day. But as Yanni says, people said, when people come in the evening, and most people do come in the evening, as soon as their work's done, they drop by, they just get this sudden boost of energy. And you see them talking and, you know, giving really spirited speeches, and at the same time, like, just collapsing right after.
Mm. And I understand a number of doctors have been there to make sure that they're okay. Doctors actually yesterday pushed the Frisco Five in wheelchairs down the street to City Hall.
Yeah, a number of doctors from UCSF volunteered to come down and push them, and also gave a lot of statements to the press. One of the doctors, Rupa, also spoke at the chambers of the supervisors and asked for the supervisors to declare the police killings in San Francisco as a health crisis.
That is Sana Salim. She reports for the independent progressive media outlet 48 Hills, and she has been covering the Frisco Five hunger strike. We're also joined by Yanni Ababa, a spokesperson with Frisco Five. Jeff Adachi leads the San Francisco Public Defender's Office. They are calling for a federal investigation of racial bias and racism within the SFPD. We did invite the SFPD to join us. They declined our invitation to be on the air. Their statement says the chief will stay and see the police reforms he implemented in the SFPD, which he has been working closely with the mayor's office. If you have any questions or comments about the recent police shootings and killings, we'd love to hear from you. Also, what do you think of the hunger strike? If you've been in the mission and you've seen it, what questions do you have about it? What do you think about their demands? They are calling on Mayor Ed Lee to fire Chief of Police Greg Suhr. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Jeff Adachi, when you talk about consequences, what could happen in these cases?
Well, two things happen once there's an officer involved shooting. There is an investigation by the internal affairs of the police department, and so they respond to the scene. They usually have the homicide division respond because there has been a death. And at the same time, there's supposed to be a, quote, independent investigation by the district attorney, and the district attorney is supposed to render a written opinion as to why the officers will or will not be charged. Now, again, I use the word independent very sparingly because, you know, the district attorney relies on police officers to make their cases. So I see it often as a conflict of interest that district attorneys are not going to charge, you know, police officers with crime. And we've seen that across the United States. And that's why everyone's kind of holding their breath, because the Amilcar Perez shooting, the district attorney appears to be closely investigating it, talking to witnesses. With the Nieto case, a lot of key witnesses were not talked to. I saw the decision that the district attorney came out with, and as I think many were unsatisfied by the lack of depth of that investigation. Now, I think the district attorney said, well, you know, we had difficulty talking to witnesses and whatnot. But so that's one big piece, is accountability. And yes, officers can be charged, and we're seeing that around the country. And we're seeing district attorneys who are refusing to charge officers. For example, in the Tamir Rice, the teenage boy in Cleveland that was executed, and Anita Alvarez from Cook County, Chicago, she was voted out of office after mishandling the Laquan McDonald shooting. So we're now seeing Black Lives Matters and activism playing a role in not only getting people elected, but getting people unelected.
What do you think of the demand to fire for Mayor Ed Lee to fire Chief Greg Suhr?
I understand it. It's symbolic in a sense, because what they're doing is saying that the culture of that organization has to change from the top down. However, you know, having been around the criminal injustice system for 30 years, I've seen chiefs come and go. And again, not to take anything away from the Frisco Five, I believe that many of the reforms that are being talked about now aren't real reforms. They're talking about use of force. That's a huge issue. That's probably the most important issue. And if you had a policy and a culture that supported that policy, Mario Woods would be alive today. Luis Gongora would be alive today. And this use of force, you know, change or revolution is happening around the country. In March, PERF, which is the think tank for a lot of police organizations, came out with the 30 principles of use of force. And they clearly say that officers should use minimal force, that's the standard that should be used in every case. See, what's happening now is that the question that's being asked is, can I kill this person? And so long as the answer is yes, I'm going to pull the trigger and shoot him 40 times. The question should be, do you absolutely have to shoot this person? And if the answer is no, then you have no business pulling the trigger, and you should be held criminally responsible if you do. And so right now, in front of the police commission, there's going to be a debate as to whether or not the term should be minimal force versus reasonable force. Now, reasonable force is a very vague standard that the Supreme Court has said that essentially allows officers under almost any circumstance to pull the trigger. Somebody waves a knife at you, boom, you can shoot them dead on the spot in the head, even though there are other alternatives available. So that's the debate that's going on right now. The police officers' associations, all of them, are supporting the reasonable force standard versus the minimal force, with the ACLU and the Office of Citizen Complaints and, you know, other people who care about this issue. You know, so this is the debate that's going on right now. And so my question is how does Chief Sir stand on these issues? Is he going to push for the reform, because he is a police chief now? And when is it going to happen? You know, he just announced that there was going to be anti-harassment training, but it was only after the second group of racist texts came out. And then, you know, at first he said it was going to be by the end of the year, and then he says it's going to be by the end of the month. That's the kind of action that people want to see. But, you know, that's low-hanging fruit. And training means nothing if you don't change the culture.
How are these questions still being asked in the year 2016?
You know, it's insane that in San Francisco, where we should be at the at the lead of progressive policing, you know, we are in the 18th century. We're in the 19th century. And certainly the fact that we have cops who are getting into trouble, who are racist to the core, is evidence. I mean, I can't believe that if you have two phones that were taken, two different officers who just happened to get arrested, one for sexual assault, the other for corruption and theft, just happened to have racist text on it. You know, and I'm not saying that everyone on the police force is racist or has these views. I hope that's not the case. But just the fact that even if we had like 1 or 2 or 3%, you know, why aren't other officers turning them in? Why are other officers responding to their texts and reading their texts and saying nothing?
Jeff Adachi leads the San Francisco Public Defender's Office. They are calling for a federal investigation of racial bias and racism within the SFPD. Sana Salim reports for the independent progressive outlet 48 Hills. She has been covering the hunger strike. And Yaini Ababa is a spokesperson for the Frisco Five. Over the past 3 years, the SFPD has shot and killed 4 men of color. 5 hunger strikers have not eaten in 2 weeks. They are calling on Mayor Ed Lee to fire Police Chief Greg Sir. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
There are many ways you can take part in the conversation on Your Call. On the phone, by sending an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org, or by going to the yourcallradio.org website. If you'd like to participate in today's show by phone, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Coming up in a half hour here on KLW, it'll be BBC's World Have Your Say at 11 o'clock.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with Peggy Orenstein about her new book, Girls and Sex, Navigating the Complicated New Landscape. She interviewed 100 girls and young women about female empowerment, objectification, internet porn, hookup culture, and sex assault on college campuses. Do young women today have more freedom to shape their sexual encounters than their mothers? I hope you can tune in for that tomorrow. Friday, it's our media roundtable. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the Frisco 5 hunger strike. It is day 14 of this hunger strike. Five people are on hunger strike. They are camping in front of the Mission Police Station on Valencia. They're there to raise awareness about the fact that four men of color have been shot and killed by San Francisco police officers over the past 3 years. They are calling on Mayor Ed Lee to fire Police Chief Greg Sir. And today we're talking about it with Yaini Ababa. She is a spokesperson for the Frisco Five. She became an activist after watching a video of Mario Woods being killed. Jeff Adachi leads the San Francisco Public Defender's Office, and Sana Salim has been reporting on the hunger strike for the progressive outlet 48 Hills. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. How do you think these issues should be addressed? What questions do you have about the hunger strikers' demands and these recent shootings? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We did invite SFPD to join us. They declined our invitation, but sent us a statement saying that the chief will stay and see the police reforms be implemented in the SFPD. And let's hear from Felicia in San Francisco. Hi, Felicia. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. It occurred to me that if the hunger strikers could raise $10,000, they could have a meeting with Ed Lee.
I see what you're saying.
Yes.
Because he's pay to play, supposedly, allegedly. Let me just put allegedly in front of that. But that's part of the problem, is that he's not listening to the will of the people. He's listening to the will of developers and big corporate interests and startups that he gives tax breaks to. Those are more important to him than the people. That was pretty evident in the fact that he wasn't even in the office yesterday, the office that the people elected him to. And he has not been representing the people at all since he became the mayor of San Francisco. He's been serving the interests of companies like Twitter and Lyft and other companies, like other startups. Tech is very important to him, but humanity is not.
What has been the effort by the Frisco Five and others to meet with Mayor Ed Lee?
Well, yesterday was the effort to meet with Ed Lee. Ed Lee, at the beginning of the hunger strike, his comment was, "They're welcome to send me an email. I check my emails," which is, to me, the same as saying, "Let them eat cake." And then when he found out that we were going to have the rally and march to City Hall so that the strikers could demand a meeting with him yesterday, he tried to ambush the strikers the day before. And when they said, "Well, we want the community and we want the press in this meeting," he refused. So they said, "We will not be meeting with you." And then he twisted it in the press and made it seem like, well, I gave them the option and they turned it down, so I offered them a meeting. But the truth is, he ambushed them and demanded a meeting on his terms that did not truly allow the community to have their voice be heard. And it wasn't transparent. And that's why the Frisco Five turned down that meeting on Monday.
And what happened when the Frisco Five and supporters went to Ed Lee's office yesterday in City Hall?
He wasn't there, but he was tweeting what he was doing. He was in Bayview tweeting pictures of him smiling with small business owners, which is surprising that he actually cares about small business owners in Bayview. I thought he only cared about Lennar developing in Bayview. He was tweeting from Pier 80, the homeless shelter that just got some money from the federal government. He knew they were coming, and it was a big middle finger to the people of San Francisco by not showing up and then tweeting pictures of him smiling with people at the time that he knew the strikers were sitting at the doors of his office.
Sanaa, have you been able to interview Ed Lee? Is he talking to reporters about this?
His office spoke to us the day that he arrived at the hunger strike, trying to meet with the hunger strikers, the Fiscal Five. And what they did tell us was that he had cleared his schedule and rescheduled a few things to come and meet them. I'll just like to reiterate the fact that the Fiscal Five, when he came to meet them, it was unannounced. He entered through a backdoor entrance.
At the police station?
At the police station. Christina actually found him there. It was actually funny when I spoke to her. She's been sitting indoors because she's been feeling really cold. She had a pneumonia scare the past few days, and she said she came out of the toilet and she saw him, and she was so shocked. She's like, I thought that I was hallucinating. And then she said, I ran and I told my fellow hunger strikers, the Frisco Five, that, hey, look, he's sneaking up on us. But his guards stood outside the door. And Edwin Lindo, one of the hunger strikers, put up a call for the press to come to the police station and be present. The press was not allowed inside the police station when Mayor Lee tried to speak to Christina, who refused speaking to him because she said that I cannot speak to you without the five people present. Going back to the mayor's office, the comment that we got was that the mayor had cleared his schedule, rescheduled something, and there is nothing planned in his schedule for the next day.
Yesterday, the strikers and their supporters tried to get into the mayor's office. When they couldn't get in, they went to a board meeting. The supervisors were meeting. And at that meeting, San Francisco Supervisor David Campos said, I am here to tell you, I am sorry with all due respect, and I respect the right of you to engage in civil disobedience. But the idea that we fire Chief Sir and that solves things, I'm sorry, that is not what I believe. That's what Supervisor David Campos said.
Yes.
What is the response to David Campos?
The chief is at the head of the department, and there is a problem in this police department. And the chief needs to go because he's facilitated this bad behavior. We saw it when he sat on the first batch of racist text messages so that it was too late for anything to be done. Right. We saw it when he himself finally had crisis intervention training most recently. So the chief of police should have had that. How long has he been a police officer? So that's most recent. We've seen that in his relationship with the POA and how they've been doing his will as thugs by intimidating good police officers who speak up. It's cronyism. And the next chief of police who comes in will know that he has to be held accountable. His behavior, he's responsible to the community. He has to answer to the community. This chief has not answered to the community, and he does not serve the community he swore to protect and serve.
And Sanaa, there are reports, you've reported on this, that Chief Sir actually might be stepping down in the near future. Is that right?
I have not heard of those reports. I do know that there have been a lot of pressure and that there has been, the community has been hoping that he does step down. But as an observer, as a witness, the one thing that sort of has fascinated me is the fact that even the strikers, even the hunger strikers and even their supporters are not, even though sometimes it's portrayed as such, they're not personally against Chief Greg Sir. This movement is not about a personal attack on that one individual. It's about if you call it symbolism, if you may, but for them it is a movement, and the firing of Chief Sir for them is just one step to a larger struggle that they want to continue doing.
Right. So many City Hall insiders say Sir is likely to retire this summer.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Thank you for calling in. Let's go next to Eric Reed. And Eric is going to be performing in front of the Mission Police Station today in solidarity with the strikers. Hi, Eric. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Yes, today we're going to be performing in support of the Frisco Five at the Mission Police Department at 2 o'clock. About a month ago, Edwin and I were speaking about our play, You're Gonna Cry, and we invited him to come to speak to the play this Friday. And he decided that he was going to join this hunger strike. And so after discussing it with him for a long time, we thought, man, you're not going to have the strength to come down to the Phoenix Theater and talk to our audience. So what we thought we would do, bring the play to him. how do we support the Frisco Five with art and activism and the mission? We thought we'd give a free performance and support these guys.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Eric. Let's go next to Anne Rosenflag, who's calling from Morgan Hill. Hi, Anne. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm a labor lawyer in Morgan Hill, and I'm also a 40-year member of Amnesty International. I just finished serving on the Blue Ribbon Commission in Santa Clara County that was appointed by the Board of Supervisors to investigate the jails after the beating death of mentally ill inmate Michael Tyree. During the process of the commission, there were also racist emails by correctional officers discovered. So this is a problem that occurs not only in San Francisco, but is widespread throughout the country. The one thing that I want to point out is that through Amnesty International, I know that what is going on in San Francisco and in Santa Clara County, both in terms of what the police officers and sheriff's deputies are doing and in terms of conditions in the jails, do not comply with international standards, both as set out in the 2005 UN Handbook for Prison Officials and in Amnesty International reports.
And Anne, have you seen any changes in Santa Clara?
Well, we issued a scathing report. The majority of the commissioners are calling for the resignation of Sheriff Lori Smith because, as Jeff Adashi and others point out, the culture for police and sheriffs starts at the top. And too much has been just ignored. There needs to be better training. There needs to be better awareness of the needs of mentally ill people. There need to be more hospital beds available. We shouldn't be incarcerating the mentally ill. We should be treating them. There are a whole host of things that need to be done, and those were some of the recommendations we made as part of this commission.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Anne. Jeff, we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line, and he wanted to find out, are there efforts around the country that have effectively improved police practices, considering that so many communities across the country are now dealing with this and calling for reforms? Is there anything that you're seeing that's working right now?
Absolutely. There are reform efforts all over the country, from Baltimore, Maryland, to Milwaukee, Washington, D.C. And there is a new type of leader out there that's looking at not only what's often referred to as best practices, but how to respect the sanctity of life. And that's where it all starts from. If you respect the sanctity of life, you're not going to shoot somebody 40 times just because they're waving a knife around. In Camden, New Jersey, they went through a similar transformation there. And there's this great video. If you go to their website, you'll see it, where they take a mentally ill man who's, you know, with a knife and is actually violently stabbing, you know, in the air with that knife as he's walking down the street. They contain the situation. They surround him. But they allow him to walk and continue to walk down the street for about 10 minutes. And then you see him at one point, he's waving the knife around and he throws the knife on the ground, and then they take him into custody peacefully. You don't have to act in 20 seconds and shoot somebody with a gun in order to contain him, especially when you got 20 or 30 police officers around. And so this is sort of, you know, what is happening. In the Bay Area, we had a very progressive police chief named Chris Magnus in Richmond. He was successful in reducing the number of incidents involving excessive force by 30%. Oakland, the police department is under a consent decree because of all the things they had going wrong there, and they saw a 70% reduction in incidents of excessive force. Now, both of those police forces now have body cameras. In San Francisco, we still don't have that. We're still toiling over the policy and whether or not officers are going to be allowed to look at the video before they write police reports. But this is what we're seeing around the country. In Seattle, they had 2,500 instances where officers were challenged by situations where they could have been in danger. And not one of those incidents, and I should say that 500 of those incidents involved weapons that were used or employed, and not one of those instances was deadly force used. And again, this is after the force had not only been trained, but that the culture shifted such that they're no longer looking at, whether or not you can shoot someone to death, but instead how to save that person's life, how to preserve that person's life. And this is only one reform. You know, I recently met the new commissioner in Maryland, where after the Freddie Gray in custody death, they finally had some huge changes. He told me that they actually now count the number of times that officers in the community say hello to people. Wow, you know, what a concept. When you talk about community policing, one of the problems is that you don't have that trust because the relationship is, you know, not how can I help you, it's you against me. And particularly in communities of color, we see this. I just publicized a case yesterday that showed that of all the people who are being cited for the criminal offense of smoking in public and 15 feet in front of a building, 70% are black. And again, we see this up and down the way. If you're black, you're four times as likely to be stopped for a traffic offense. You're seven times as likely to be arrested. You're 11 times as likely to be booked. When you're taken into custody, you're more likely to be kept in, even though you're more likely to meet the criteria for release. The sentences are higher, and it goes on and on. So, again, this is something that we can fix, but we have to make people aware of it. That's why public defenders are now being trained in my office to raise these issues, disproportionate impact.
The statement the SFPD sent over said that the chief will stay and see the police reforms be implemented in the SFPD. What reforms are they talking about exactly?
Well, there is a lot on the table. Right now, there are a number of policies that are going on. There are... You know, is this you know, training for, it's called crisis intervention training, and our office participates in that, but it's not mandatory, and only 20% of the police force has been trained. And officers who were involved in the Mario Wood shooting, who actually shot him, and the Gongora shooting were also trained in this training. So training is not enough unless it's backed up by consequences. Now, with the Mario Woods shooting and the Gongora shooting, you know, at least the essence of what people took away from what Chief Sir was saying is that, oh, these are justified shootings. So if you have the police chief intimating that, oh, you know, this is acceptable police procedure, and he might be correct about that because the standard is so vague that it allows officers to pretty much do whatever they want. But if that's going to be the standard, that we're going to judge, the use of force by police, it's going to happen again. It's going to happen again and again and again, and we're going to be back in the same situation 6 months from now.
We have an email from Julie who says about 1,000 people showed up to demand that our chief of police step down. Under his leadership, 21 people have been murdered at the hands of SFPD over the past 5 years. No real investigations were made. Justice has not been served. People poured out onto the streets protesting police brutality by the tens of thousands in New York, LA, and Chicago. Yesterday, one of the speakers at City Hall said, San Francisco is so racist, it's in deep denial that racism even exists. We are a complacent community that has been taught not to stand up for what's right. Having experienced illegal and inappropriate abuse of power by the SFPD myself, I could not ignore what is happening right in front of me, says Julie. What about the racist elements of this? Do you want to speak to that, Yaini?
I think the problem in San Francisco has been, is always known as a progressive city, a diverse city. But the problem is, and we spoke about this on a panel on Friday night. The problem is that, there are two San Franciscos. There are San Franciscos for white people, and there's a San Francisco for people of color. And, When people of color speak up about the problems that they're experiencing as San Franciscans, progressive white people appropriate their voice. So that's part of the problem. We're in deep denial. Oh, we're progressive. We're liberal. We could never be racist. And then when the people of color say, yeah, wait a minute, you are racist, they go, oh, okay, well, let's tell you how you should feel about the racism that you're experiencing. And that's part of the problem. But racism, my grandfather was a police officer, and the minute he retired, he talked about how racist SFPD was. And I have white police officers who have told me how racist SFPD is. I remember as a child, the police officers got out of the car, and they walked down the street and got to know the people in their community. Now, they drive by in the car, and they glare at you. And right now, we're in a crisis in the city where we have a whole bunch of transplants who come from different parts of the country where there is no diversity, there is no tolerance. A lot of people have who've moved here haven't lived in a big city and don't know how to live in a diverse, big, progressive city. And they've brought that hate and intolerance with them. So they don't care that this is happening to people of color in San Francisco. As long as they get theirs, they don't really care. And I've talked to people who have said that to me. And that's part of the problem. And this isn't just the city's problem. This is the country's problem. So the problem is that black lives have no value in America. It's okay to shoot a 12-year-old boy with a toy gun within 12 seconds of arriving at a park before assessing the situation because they don't look at a black child as a child. They look at him as a threat. And that's because this country was built on slavery. So black people haven't had value. And then Black Lives Matter had to come to be because we had to say, wait a minute, we matter too. And we were responded with, well, for you speaking up, you're terrorists, and all lives matter, and blue lives matter. Well, if all lives matter, we wouldn't have to remind you that black lives matter, and brown lives matter. So, I mean, that's the truth. And there weren't 700 people yesterday. There were probably at one point, about 1,100 people there. So SFPD always underreports how many people actually attend these things. So
we have a question also about what's next for the hunger strikers. Another listener was at the march yesterday, says it was very inspiring. What are you asking people to do next? Are they planning anything in other neighborhoods in San Francisco? What's next for the movement?
Well, one thing that's really important to understand is that this is a black and brown struggle, and it needs to be led by the black and brown community. And we want to give the black and brown community in San Francisco a voice. That doesn't mean that other people of other ethnic backgrounds can't join us, but that has to be the voice in this struggle. Right now, we need everybody to use that voice and step up and let City Hall know that there will be no business as usual until they fire the chief of police.
Another listener wants to write in, ask a question. Would getting Sir create real change? It might feel like a victory, but why should we think that the next chief will be any better?
The next chief will know that he'll have to be held accountable. His behavior will have to be held to a standard by the people, not the city hall that appointed him, but the people. And that's the difference.
What would you say, Jeff?
Well, again, it depends on who it is. If you have somebody who comes in that can not only lead, you know, the change, whether that's change in policy, whether that's a change in the expectations of the officers in using force, whether it's a complete culture a change in that department that is led by an individual. The question is, you know, are the people going to follow? In any organization, and here you have 2,000 people, you're going to have people who aren't committed to change, who will resist everything, tooth and nail, not to change. Those people have to go if they're not doing their jobs properly. Certainly, we've rooted out some of those individuals. But are there more? How are they going to be identified? There's an early intervention system that was set up in the SFPD to identify officers and even rogue officers before they go rogue. And I understand that there are 300 officers who have been flagged in that system, and only six have been sent to counseling. So again, I mean, that number seems astonishing to me, that you would have 300 police officers who are flagged because, you know, in some cases there have been complaints made against them within a certain period of time, yet, you know, we're not seeing the reaction. With the Office of Citizen Complaints, I mean, we have this supposed watchdog agency, but the reality is that last year they did not sustain one single complaint of racism that was made by the public.
Yanni, we have 1 minute left. The hunger strikers are going on to day 15 of not eating. Mm-hmm. What's next for them?
We are asking the community to support us by putting pressure on the mayor. I can't really tell you what's next right now. But something to consider, something in terms of what you said, is to consider that the hiring practices of SFPD, one of the officers who shot Mario Woods shot three people in the back when he was a police officer in Antioch. So something's going on with the screening. One of the most terrorizing police officers at Mission Police Station, I'm not going to say his name, but kids from Mission High call him the terrorist, was the officer who killed Derek Gaines when he was a police officer in South San Francisco. So we have to look at their hiring practices as well.
Well, we will continue following this. Yaini Ababa is a spokesperson for the Frisco Five. Five people have been on hunger strike for 2 weeks now. Jeff Adachi leads the San Francisco Public Defender's Office, and Sanaa Saleem reports for 48 Hills. We did invite the SFPD to join us. They declined our request, but said that the chief is staying, and they say that he will oversee police reforms. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with Peggy Ornstein about her new book, Girls and Sex, Navigating the Complicated New Landscape. Ornstein interviewed nearly 100 girls and young women about empowerment, internet porn, hookup culture, and sexual assault on college campuses. How are young women navigating sex in today's world? And do they have more freedom today to shape their sexual encounters than their mothers? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.